You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, George.
In hour three, we will speak with Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, covers college basketball. Yep. He will let us know what he thinks of the madness as to, of course, I think a lot of brackets are probably busted or the way they are right now. So we'll talk to him a little bit about who has gotten the better benefit of this more than anything else. Also, we will chat with Dino Anson, gives a Pels report, kind of look at, into the games tomorrow against Dallas. Then you got Wednesday, Indiana, and then Thursday, you got the Lakers here as well. So we'll touch on all of that and more. As we touched on also college baseball over the weekend, Southeastern 5-0, they won the midweek games last week, won over the weekend against Lamar as well. Mississippi State and Purdue, the midweek games. South Alabama and Jackson State tomorrow and Wednesday. We already have a word out for Coach Reiser to try to join us this week. So looking forward to chatting with Matt, seeing what's going on with Lions baseball as they've had a nice start to the season. 16-6 overall. LSU taking 2-3 against Missouri. Tulane dropping 2-3 against Long Beach State. Nichols lost 2-3 against Houston Baptist. They won't play again until the weekend against McNeese. And then UNO dropped 2-3. They will face Ole Miss tomorrow. We've had a little fun with the fact that it's an 11 a.m. start. It doesn't make much sense to have an 11 a.m. start on a Tuesday. I'm sure there's a reason for it, though. Field trip or something, right? Like for the kids for school or Jason? I don't really know.
Yeah, I couldn't tell
you. I don't understand 11 a.m. I just don't understand 11 a.m.
Who's watching baseball at 11 a.m.?
Again, maybe it's like a field trip or something.
It's poor kids. I'd rather be in class.
Stop. You'd rather be in class than actually watch a baseball game?
No, I'm kidding. Come on.
Okay, thank you.
That's pretty early, though. No.
It is. It is what it is. We've been talking about some of the questions of the day at ESPN Radio NOLA. What do you think of the officiating? It was Alvin Gentry right about the officiating when it comes to, Jason, the lack of calls that Anthony Davis gets. Because I mentioned what was interesting about ESPN Stats and Info. ESPN Stats and Info put out something yesterday that said, hey, you know, DeMarcus Cousins right now leads the NBA, even though he's not playing, still, in fouls per game, 7.8. Anthony Davis is 7.3. James Harden, 7.1. So AD right now, the most active player that apparently gets calls. I'm not buying it. Not buying. And I thought Alvin Gentry went off the right way.
Can we hear?
You want to hear some more?
I want to hear the whole thing, actually.
You want the whole thing?
Yes, why not? We've never heard that from him. Not like that.
Not like this?
No.
At ESPN Radio NOLA, what do you think of the following?
I thought we played hard. I thought we competed. I thought we did everything we had to try to win the game. That's what I thought, you know. You know, the thing that bothers me more than anything, and I really don't care, is that, you know, we try to play the right way and we play our ass off. And then what happened to us is that, you know, AD never gets a call. He never gets a call. You know, we talk about them holding him. We talk about them grabbing him on rolls. We're talking about him coming under him on post up. He never gets a call. Not one. And you know why? Because he doesn't bitch and complain about it. He just keep playing the game. And so then it comes down to a few plays in the game. You can't guess on plays when you got teams playing for playoff spots. You can't guess on the game. You can't guess on a foul. When a guy's got his hands on his chest, and he's got his hand in, and you call a three-point shot, that's not right. That's not correct. That's not the way you do it. And then you give them the ball back on another play when they undercut a player, that's not right either. That's not correct. That's not the way you call the game. It's not. And then when you can get technical fouls from walking away from a guy, then this league has really changed. I walked away from him so I wouldn't get a technical. That being said, I thought we did everything we could to try to win the game. That's a great team down there. They're a great team with a great player. You know, to me, he's the MVP of the league. He's done everything to earn that. You know, his team got the best record. He's a closer. He comes up with big shots when he needs to. You know, and they got two guys, he and CP, that can close the game that are great, great players. And that's a great team down there, and Mike's done a great job coaching. But all I'm saying is that, you know, if you're going to do that, then call it both ways. You know, when AD rolls to the basket and AD's grabbed and he's held, then give him the same calls that you would give somebody else. That's all. It's not right. It's not right. Because you know what? We're battling our ass off for a playoff spot. And all we want is to have the game called the right way. And I'll take the damn fine that they're going to give me tomorrow. That's fine. But that, I'm sick of it because we hadn't said anything the whole year. We hadn't said one thing about it the whole year. We talk about it. We send it in. We write it down on the evaluation. Can you please watch the screen and rolls? Can you please watch them grabbing AD? Can you please watch them under him when he's shooting the basketball? Okay, okay. But nothing ever happens with it. And so I'm sick and tired of it. And so I'll take whatever they want to give me. That's fine. But all I want to do is have an equal opportunity to win the game and not have an opportunity where we're guessing out of the corner on the biggest play of the game where we call a three-point foul. Everybody look at that. You take a look at that. If anybody out here thinks it's a foul, then you tell me. Then I'll shut up and I won't say one more thing ever again. You take a look at the play. You take a look at the play when the guy walks up and winks his eye and says, like, yeah, I got him, you know. Thanks. Bye.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
It's my favorite part when he goes, thanks, bye. So polite. So polite.
Later.
So polite.
That was fun. I enjoy that, Alvin.
Look, at the end of the day, again, I think he absolutely is saying what he felt and what we see. And it's tough. This team is battling. That's the one thing you can see. And I've always said this, Jason. If a team plays hard and they come up short, a fan base will be behind you, man. They got your backs. Right? What was inexcusable and why people were calling for his firing or Dell Demps' removal was because in some parts of the season, earlier in the season, you have no energy. And then you always said, for whatever reason, there's no ball movement and stuff. And I've always said this. When you're a coach at that level, you know basketball. You know what to do. Now, some handle adjustments better than others. Some have better game plans better than others. At the end of the day, it's not complicated. A successful NBA coach is someone that can handle and deal with personalities, players, things of that nature. And being able to get the most out of players. And that's why I've always said, maybe it's time to look somewhere else if the message becomes stale, if people don't listen. But especially after Boogie Cousins' injury, you know, they go on a stand there in a streak where they don't win some games, and then they do. And then when they do, they win 10 straight. And they lose 4 or 5. Like that. Holding on now to the sixth spot. But again, I just went through the standings a little bit ago. They're all right there. This is not going to be decided until the final week of the season. Lee, thanks for calling in. What you got, bud?
Hey, Gus. You know, I'm going to tell you, Alvin Gentry, I think, was a touch of genius when he went off on that rant. Because I think that was more for his team than anything, than anybody else. Because he took that $15,000 hit. You know they're going to take care of that some kind of way. They're going to find a charity that he champions and They're going to donate in his name, and, you know, of course, that'll be write-off, so that'll take care of his fine. But what I wanted to comment on, I thought that the team needed to hear that message. Hey, man, Coach got our back. He proved mm-hmm. it. He fell on the floor for us. You know, they're going to play their hearts out for him now. And I think by him doing that, I think, it, you know, he put on his big boy pants for coaching. I finally think he's arrived. You know, and I think, because I'm sitting here thinking, man, I'm watching the same thing he's watching. AD's being mugged on the screen and rolls. He's absolutely, they're holding him like in platoon formation. He would get held at the top of the key. If he get past that person, then the next one, the big, going to hold him down in the box. So I'm sitting there like, man, are you serious? They're not blowing a whistle. And notice against the Celtics, they started calling it.
Yeah.
So you know what they say about that? Their squeaky wheel. Their squeaky wheel get the grease, man. And he needs to squeak a lot more, I think.
Lee, I mean, and again, I'm not trying to be the homer guy, but you cannot do some of the things they're doing on that guy. And again, when he fouled out at San Antonio, I mean, oh, if it wouldn't have been a brand new spanking TV I got for Christmas, dude, it might have been in trouble. Because I was fuming watching that game against San Antonio. It was just, it was pathetic. It was absolutely pathetic. I mean, for him to foul out on ticky-tack Cole's tops, and then he's just getting pummeled and driving the lane, and literally his body gets sent in another direction, and no call is made. It's just, it's mind-boggling. And to your point, and I'll let you finish, after the game, when on Saturday, Anthony Davis in the locker room, of course, Gentry has his players back. I don't know what he said or saw the interview, but obviously he feels some type of way, which he should. We think some calls didn't go our way or made some that shouldn't have been made. We can't do anything about that. Anytime you have a coach who is fighting for his players, it means a lot to the locker room. He was upset about it during the game, after the game, getting texts. Like I said, you know, as a player, your coach has your back. Scott Kushner tweeting it word for word there in the post-game locker room. But that's the point, Lee. To your point, that point was made to his players.
Absolutely. And you know, we talk about that energy and that effort, man. Sometimes it takes as much as something like that. A coach willing to fall on the sword for us, the least we could do is play our hearts out for 40 minutes. So that alone will raise your energy level. I know these guys are professionals, but they're also human beings. Just everybody needs motivation every now and then. And I'm telling you, I just think that this team has enough on it to scare some people when they get in the playoffs. I'm not saying when. I'm calling it. They're going to make it. It's not going to be easy, but they're going to make it. If they just split going the rest of the way, they'll make it. I think they'll make it as an 8 seed if they just split. Win one, lose one, all the way. They'll make it.
Look, I'm telling you, this stretch this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Dallas, Indiana, Lakers, take 2 of 3. Saturday, you're at Houston, man. That's going to be hard. I mean, your legs are going to be done at Houston on Saturday. I'd like to think they got a shot. I might, you know, I don't know. I might try to get Carver some college tuition there. You're asking a lot. I mean, I'm just being honest, right? 4 games and.
Right.
In that many days. I mean, it's just crazy. So if you can take 2 or 3 here at home, though, because you're in your bed, you're not traveling, they'll be smart. You know, forget shoot around. I'll just see you at the game. Get there early and get your shots in. You know what I'm saying? Like, it'll be easier.
Right.
But if you can take 2 or 3, tomorrow's vital. You got to get the first one. And then if you can just take of the next two over the next 2 days, because the Lakers are playing good ball, Pacers are playing pretty good ball as well, so they're not going to be easy. I'll feel great. You get 3, dude, I don't care if they lose Saturday at Houston. I would feel better. But this week's key, if they can just get through this stretch, I'll feel a little bit better, man.
Just watch that bottom line where 8 and 9 separate, 8 and 9, you won't see a little bit more separation between 8 and 9. Mm-hmm. If we can get Denver to fall off a little bit more and get the other team down below them. But if we can get them two teams to drop a couple more games and get a little separation, I think we can battle with the other 40-win teams that we're dealing with right now that we're tied with. We can battle them out for one of those spots. So, I'm excited about this NBA season, and I'm even more encouraged for next year because you already know, man. I think it's going to be done. I think They're going to go ahead and give Boogie that big deal. He's going to get that big deal. Even though he's coming off an Achilles, they might go ahead and max him out.
I'll tell you what, Lee, thanks for the phone call. But if you go to his Twitter page, he is posting video after video of him working out and trying to get back at it. And I love it. I love that attitude. You know, it definitely shows he's all in. And I can understand why he'd be all in, though. But Pete's 175. would you be motivated if you were anywhere near close to that kind of a deal coming?
I would have new layers of motivation I didn't know I had.
You train like Rocky Balboa.
Oh my God! Right? Are you kidding? Three a days, at least.
Look, man, come on, pals, get through this week. Dallas, Indiana, Lakers. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday at Houston. Next Tuesday, you host Portland. Next Friday at Cleveland. But the big news there: no Tyronn Lue. He's stepping away for a leave of absence due to medical reasons for a little bit. So we'll see. And then you host OKC on April Fool's Day, April 1st. Man, this is getting exciting. Up next, though, you want to talk about exciting? March Madness. Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com. I said weeks ago, I think it's anyone's sort of tournament. Wow, after 4 days, it might actually be. Or is it? We'll ask him next on ESPN New Orleans. The works. Chip, how are you this afternoon?
Putting my brain back together, but I've got a couple days until we got to get back into it, so that's good. I mean, that kind of working a weekend like this past one is as emotionally draining, but also as rewarding and physically exhausting all at the same time as we get in terms of covering college sports.
It's nuts. Normally, I would probably have you on after that first big week and be like, hey, let's talk about some of the storyline. I honestly don't know which storyline to really start on and go with. It has to be UMBC, right?
But not just. I think that UMBC, because of the individuality and because of the novelty of being the first team to do it. But, I mean, like, did you know who Sister Jean was a month ago? Like, did you know about this Loyola Chicago basketball team? You know, the fact that we've got so many top seeds that have been bounced already. I think it's like 2-1s, 2-2s, but then also like 2-7s and 2-11s that are left here. I mean, it's been an odd year where you kind of do a dance around your bracket. I'm sure that fans who filled them out were, you know, that it feels like they're shredding them right now. But you've got all these storylines. And it's like none of them were the ones that we predicted when we first looked at the field of 68 on Selection Sunday.
One of the things, Chip, that you and I talked about throughout the season, we were talking about, and I asked you, I said, is this as wide open a tournament or a season as you've seen in a while? And the main reason I asked you that was because you saw so many, I guess, different number ones and teams just moving out. I mean, Kentucky dropped out of the top 25 for a bit before moving. It was just... It was a lot of state of influx, and you kept saying, well, there's one constant. Said Villanova's pretty good. You said you were trying to wrap your head around Virginia and things of that nature. But for the most part, I guess what you saw in the regular season is what you're seeing right now in the tournament.
Yeah, and I think that another team that we see here in the tournament, especially when we're like kind of trying to advance and play out in our minds the way the next two games especially are going to go, And that's at Villanova, and then another team, not one that was really fighting for the number one spot during the season, but the number one team in the preseason poll, Duke. They look like teams that are playing like national championship contenders. I mean, that's the oftentimes when we trace back the path of a national champion, there's going to be maybe one game where there was a little bit of a hiccup and maybe they got a little bit lucky. But for the most part, those tournament runs, when you are the team that cuts down the nets at the end of it, six straight wins under your belt in the tournament, a lot of the games were ones where you were dominant. And that's Villanova and Duke looked like Final Four and national championship contenders. And I think that, you know, in those two regions, it's interesting that those two have become so chalky. You know, in the South, you know, it's Kentucky as the highest seed remaining. None of the top four making the South Regional Semifinals, first time that's happened in the Sweet 16 ever for any region.
Wow.
Down in the West, you lose both the number one, Xavier, and the number two, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. The two best teams left in this tournament are Villanova and Duke, and they have two of the toughest roads to the Final Four from here. Kentucky, on the other hand, has, what John Calipari, for all the crying that he did on Selection Sunday about how his team got screwed and he was put in the toughest region, he's got to like his draw right now because, you know, Big Blue Nation is going to absolutely flood Atlanta. I'm going to be there, and I'm expecting it to be even wilder than a Kentucky home game because not only of the fact that Kentucky travels so well to a place like Atlanta, but those fans have got to know that it is setting up for a cakewalk for that young and talented but flawed Wildcats team to potentially make a run to the Final Four.
Speaking of Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, let's kind of just start up there in that matchup in the Sweet 16, Loyola, Chicago, and Nevada. You know, I want to say one of the reasons you would probably have followed Nevada through Twitter, things of that nature, is JaVale McGee's bet with Kevin Durant, right? But it's a pretty good basketball team. They've played some pretty good ball.
Yeah, they played some pretty good ball, and they've got one of those advantages where you look at the roster and like the Martin twins, Caleb and Cody Martin, they actually started right here near me at NC State. Very good basketball players, but because of the end of the Mark Gottfried era and some of the turnover that came with that, they were one of several NC State players in that era to decide to take their talents elsewhere. So, you've got a Nevada team with a lot of really talented players. The brand of basketball is fun. You know, Eric Musselman has a positionless style of offense where none of the players are really taller than 6'7", but they've got like four or five guys that are all 6'7", and they can all shoot the three-pointer. So they can really stress teams when they're able to get it going and start hitting their shot. So I think that you've got Nevada as a team that has been top 25, top 30 good for much of the season. And listen, they've just been lucky. I think that it's a little bit lucky when you've played, I think it is 85 or 88 minutes of basketball in the NCAA tournament in between Texas and Cincinnati. I think Nevada has only led for 1 minute and 37 seconds of those 85 minutes. Like, this is just a team that has been trailing and coming from behind for its entire tournament existence this season. And I don't know how much longer you can do that. You know, people like to throw around the term playing with fire. You know, maybe that's just part of the confidence that Musselman's put in. But they're going up against a good Loyola Chicago team, a Loyola Chicago team that's only lost like five times. And Loyola Chicago beat Florida earlier this year. They just beat Miami, which had the number 3 seed in the ACC tournament. And they just beat Tennessee, which was tied for the SEC regular season championship. So, right. Coming from the Missouri Valley, like this is a Loyola team that is, mid-major in Cinderella, in seed, and in branding. But in terms of the quality of basketball they play, I mean, they're absolutely deserving of their spot here in the Sweet 16. So I favor Loyola in that matchup.
Michigan and Texas A&M will be an intriguing matchup for me, too. I saw a lot of people kind of start saying, hey, Michigan might be able to make a run here at the beginning of the tournament before it even started. A&M, I mean, that was a surprising beatdown of North Carolina. That I don't know if they can duplicate that again or not, but is Michigan the favorite in the West here?
I did see the Zimmer Gonzaga, and I had it wrong. I saw the Vegas odds numbers, and I was like, wow, Michigan, way too high. So, yeah, I was a Michigan doubter. I looked at this Michigan team. I saw, a more defensive-minded team. I saw a team that plays slow, not necessarily as offensively dynamic as previous Michigan teams. You know, they weren't a very good free-throw shooting team. Like, there was a lot of statistics that, for me, were red flags suggesting that they might get bounced in the first weekend. I've come full circle and probably, maybe over justified the other way. I think Michigan's good enough to win the national championship. I don't think they will, but they just things are starting to break their way. And between Texas A&M and Michigan, my pick is with the hot team, and then I've got Michigan and Gonzaga, and I think that could be a really 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 good game. I'm just going to favor the Wolverines. I think that they're just on one of those runs. When you hit a buzzer beater in the style that Jordan Poole did to beat Houston, I mean, that was a game that Houston absolutely had won. That's the example of the other side of this, where when we go back and we look at Final Four and national championship teams, there's always one game often mm-hmm. in the first two rounds where it took almost a miracle for that team to escape. And sometimes after that, things get easier. You know, I like North Carolina probably won the national championship last season when it beat Kentucky on that Luke May shot. Because after that, those next two games just kind of broke the right way. I wonder if Michigan, in its own way, by getting past Houston, really opened up the door to be able to make a Final Four run.
Syracuse, a surprise team. Obviously, they've won a handful of games almost just about having to play that play-in game, being that 11 seed. Could they give Duke some trouble?
A little bit, but I tend to think that this Duke team, because of its familiarity with Syracuse, is not going to allow itself to be flustered. Michigan State looks flustered. It shot 29% from the field. It was bricking shots all over the place. And visibly on the court, they just did not look comfortable playing against that zone defense. Duke not only knows it, Mike Krzyzewski and Jim Boeheim are longtime friends. Jim Boeheim's an assistant on Team USA when Mike Krzyzewski was the head coach. There's no uncomfort there. Duke knows exactly what to do. And Duke, interestingly enough, has been playing some zone defense. So, you know, which of those two teams do you think has more players that can make shots? Tyus Battle had a couple of huge possessions, and Syracuse got a lot done at the line. But, man, you know, at the same time, that was a Syracuse wasn't doing a whole lot to pull away from the Spartans. And so I think Duke will win. And I would not be surprised if Duke wins by, like, 10 to 12 points.
All right. So as we close up here, Chip, what's your revised Final Four?
Ooh, okay, revised Final Four. Still got Villanova, mm-hmm. still got Duke. I think I've got Michigan coming out of the West, and I've got Kentucky coming out of the South. So then I've got Kentucky over Michigan, then Villanova over Duke, Villanova over Kentucky. Villanova, my pick before the tournament, still my pick to win the national championship.
That's the lone thing that's still standing on my bracket. I actually have Villanova because of what you told me, Chip. So I'm holding and hoping that you're right on that one, man. Thank you for your time this afternoon, Chip.
Absolutely. Y'all be well.
At Chip_Patterson is the way to follow him over on Twitter. And, of course, CBSSports.com, the college basketball page there. So you have it. Michigan, Kentucky, Villanova and Duke into the Final Four, the revised Final Four. How's Dino's Final Four bracket? We'll ask him his thoughts on Gentry's chat with the officials through his post-game presser there. $15,000 fine for it. But it seems to have gotten the respect of his players. Hi, Dino Hanson Oops. The way to follow him over on Twitter. That's Alvin Gentry following Saturday's loss to the Rockets 107-101. Team responds the next day. Yesterday, they win 108-89 over the Celtics. AD, 34 points, 11 rebounds. Shaq Diallo, 17 points. Nikola Mirotic, 16 points. Dino, I think the team responded, and judging by the reactions on Twitter, I think the fans responded to Coach Gentry getting a little heated.
And the officials responded because on Saturday night they had gone to the free throw line 12 times and last night 25 times. So
imagine that.
You know, and I thought it was a very good thing to do. And, you know, I've always stated this. Look, I've never been a fan, and I don't even know when and why it started that. Well, they're at home, so you expect the team to get more calls than another. Hold on. Time out. How about just calling the game equally fair, whether you're on the road or whether you're at home? I can understand showing a little favoritism here, but, you know, it's extremely disrespectful to a team when you're working your tails off. And no question, AD is grabbed, held, and, you know, and in all honesty, Gus, if there wouldn't be so much that is allowed during mm-hmm. the course of the game. When the game is on the line, you wouldn't expect certain calls. If you're calling the game fairly from the beginning, if you are giving the calls the way they're supposed to be, especially when they're earned. And that's the thing about it. Not, you know, you're not just giving calls for the sake of giving calls. These are earned fouls that should be there. And AD by far, and not just saying this, of course, because it's our team, but the man has been putting up phenomenal numbers since the All-Star break. And the fact that he doesn't get calls, it is baffling. It is disturbing. But no question, the team also responded. And you like the fact that as a player, when your coach does have your back, and Alvin putting it out there is something that, you know, we've talked about for the longest time. Dude, show your man. Show your anger. Don't just, you know, try to be coy and cool, because we as fans and as players and as media, we want to see the passion that is there, and you know, and you're not tolerating it. So, the you know, the Pels as a team stepped up really big yesterday. I am not surprised at how well Sheck has been playing. Nikola starts to find his rhythm, so to speak, now at home. He's played much better on the road than he has at home. Of course, what AD is doing is just off the charts. And the fact that we are still in this battle right now, and I love the fact that, again, Alvin put it out there. Hey, listen, we're in the middle of a battle for our lives. Between, and I posted it yesterday right after the Pels game, you know, between fifth and ninth at the time. You know, you are literally in a log jam. There were four teams yesterday that were at 40 and 30, and because Minnesota lost last night to Houston, you know, that put them in the eighth position. But Gus, this is an extremely tight race down the stretch, and yes, those calls matter, man. But and I'll say this too, and I tweeted this yesterday as well. Fans really don't realize the impact that they have. The energy that you bring to this basketball team, understand this. We aren't on the outside trying to get in. We're in. Now we need their help to sustain that same level of play, man.
Well, I'll say this. One of the other things that I thought when I say maybe people responded, right? 18,277 reported attendance sellout, and by every indication, and, you know, the players, I mean, it was a good amount of butts in that seat. You know, I'm probably going to go like 16, right? If not 17, but it was close to whatever the tickets sold and stuff. But that's how, man, if it's like that the next 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, against Dallas, against Indiana, and against the Lakers, it's going to help, man. It's going to help because you know those legs are going to be tired. You're at Houston on Saturday, but I'm not even worrying about Houston, Portland next Tuesday, and then the Cavs, who have their own issues right now on April 1st. Take care of your business these three games. You can go a long way in really helping you, because you saw when you dropped four or five like they did, dude, they came back down to the pack here in that little margin of error that took 10 games to win in a row was wiped out. So they're important, man. They're so important, and that means others have to step up. Touch a bit on Sheck Diallo's gameplay, man. 17 points yesterday. Every player, including AD, after the game yesterday, touching on his energy. A player like that can be crucial in a stretch like this week.
Extremely huge. You know, Sheck is doing exactly what he's done from day one. He's running the floor, and this is what makes him extremely advantageous to this Pelicans basketball team, is that even though he's a big, he's a gazelle, just like AD is. They get up and down the floor with relative ease. He is, and I know you know how much I love bigs. The thing I love about bigs and Sheck Diallo is that not only is he running the floor, leading the break, but he's posting up big. His hands are up, not asking for the ball, but demanding the ball, saying, hey, my guard, look at me. I'm wide open. Get me the ball. And when you can put a team on their heels transitionally, it's going to bode very well for you because you're staying in the attacking mode. No question that first half was kind of sluggish. It was back and forth, nip and tuck. But the way they proceeded to take over the second half, this is a fun brand of basketball that you're seeing with our guys right now. Sheck Diallo doing everything on both ends of the floor. And that's what you're really enjoying, is the fact that his effort is there all the time. So some games when he's not getting minutes, you question, what's the problem, especially when the team is sluggish? He's the guy that can uplift you. But he has been stellar since he has gotten his minutes. Unfortunately, due to Boogie's injury, he's had to play more, especially with no longer having Omer Asik here. But, man, look at the benefits of this team that they are receiving because, hey, he's doing a hell of a lot more than Omer Asik ever did. He's doing a hell of a lot more than Alexia Jensa did. So, again, it's a no-brainer how and why Shek is on the floor. He's playing extremely well at a high level also. But I think also it's predicated off the fact that he's seeing and understanding that this is playoffs. AD has stepped his level up. Drew has stepped his level up. Rajon has done what exactly I was hoping he would do when I mentioned for the past three seasons why we needed to have a Rajon here. And he's showing you he is that true leader and a difference he makes when he is on the basketball floor. Again, I go back to his pedigree. Look at what he did in Boston right away playing with the KG, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen. Look at what he did to Chicago's basketball team last year. If not for Rajon going down, Boston would not have been playing Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals. Rajon Rondo basketball IQ is through the roof. He's a floor general, and he puts his team in a great position to win games all the time.
Speaking of Dino Hanson, Dino Hoops 11 is the way to follow over on Twitter. Dino, one of the other things to touch on in this win, really more than anything, is the fact they didn't have to play a lot of these minutes. And you saw Rajon Rondo not play Saturday because of rest, and I guess kind of looking into this week what's going to be like. Normally you do your daily dimes when it comes to game day. Is one of the daily dimes just overall in general, really, how are you going to handle the roster here this week and really try to keep fresh? I mean, how do you stay fresh in three NBA games in a row?
Yeah, this is going to be a serious juggling act between today, of course, which was a very light practice for the guys, just shoot around, going over scouting report for Dallas, because, by the way, Dallas is playing much better basketball here of late, so you can't sleep on them at all right now. And then you've got Indiana to follow, finishing off with a very improved L.A. Lakers basketball team, more than what people had suspected. Prime example, in their last 10 games, Lakers are 6-4. In Dallas's last 10 games, you know, they're 4-6, but they're playing a much better brand of basketball, even though they've just lost their last two. I say that to say this. With these next three games, it's going to be all about getting your rest, eating properly, and staying off of your feet, because playing back-to-back games are extremely tough. But now you're playing back-to-back-to-back 3 days in a row, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then having to get on a plane to fly away to Houston. This is a very tough stretch. If the Pels can put together these three wins, which is to be their only focus, right now you can't look past Dallas. You don't want that to be the trap game. I mean, look at some of the March Madness, and I know you say you're going to talk about it as you just finished talking with Chip about it a minute ago, but, you know, you don't want Dallas to be that trap game because you're looking past them, thinking about the Lakers and thinking about the Indiana Pacers, who are playoff teams, because, you know, you don't want to give these other teams whatsoever any margin for error. Because here's the thing about it, Gus. Yeah, right now we're 40-31. But if we all of a sudden go to 40-32, let's say for instance, or 40-33, now we could be in that ninth position if Denver puts together a few wins. And that's the thing that's so interesting about this, where we are right now, is the fact that you've got Utah, the Pels, San Antonio, and Minnesota all with 40 wins, 30 losses. But then right on the outside, you've got Denver at 38-32 and the Clippers at 37-32. So you're doing all that you can to make sure your guys are well rested. They're looking at video even at home, going over scouting reports, because you don't need to be in the gym to look at video and go over scouting reports. You know exactly what team brings what. But more importantly, the Pels have to continue to focus on what they do well right now.
That's Dino Hanson. Follow him over on Twitter at DinoHoops11. It's the way to check him out as well. Dino's Daily Dimes will be there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for games against the Mavericks, the Pacers, and the Lakers. Thank you, Dino.
It's a good thing it's for the NBA and not the March Mayhem and Madness, because I have no clue what's going on in college basketball. Nobody knows anything.
Hey, we'll touch on that on Thursday specifically, because you got to defend your Pac-12, but then again, you really don't, because I think it's just madness all the way around. Thank you, bud. We'll talk on that later on the week.
All righty, brother. Talk to you later.
The Pelicans Report brought to you by Dufresne Building Materials, locations in Cutoff, Thibodaux, Belchase, and Slidell. Make Dufresne Building Materials your one-stop shop for all your building project needs. Get the latest info online, dbmlumber.com. We come back, Marlon Favorite, quickly on Ndamukong Suh. Where does he one of the main issues, if not the main issue? He expects money wherever he's going. So the money isn't the number one thing. It's the best fit. I'm a little fearful because the Rams would be scary.
Scary isn't the word. More like horror story. Hello, somebody. I'm sitting here talking with DJ and Frank right now about that. Man, it would be scary in L.A., but I think right now for the best fit for Sue would be to go with the Saints, and I'll tell you why. It's a team that's really building a nice roster. They have a good mixture of young guys and older guys on their roster. Sue's a veteran. He's never been on a winning team. Yes, he's been on a really good defensive line with the Detroit Lions, playing with Nick Fairley, hence the reason Nick Fairley came here with the Saints as well. And he's seen success as a front, but not as a team. New Orleans looks very attractive to him because, I mean, we have a little space, so we can bring him in on a nice 1 or 2 year deal, and he could try to go be on a winning team and possibly be a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that's going to be very, I guess, difficult to try to kind of gauge. I mean, look, your money is one way, and if I looked at all those teams, I would say Rams and Saints right there, even above the Titans, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, and it's funny you said that. I'm still sitting here talking with DJ and Frank the Barber, Leonard's mentor, and we said the same thing, the Saints, because another team that's a Super Bowl contender, and the Rams. Those two teams will probably be, for right now, when think about it, him and Aaron Donald, that would be sick. And then at the same time, him and Sheldon Rankins, that would be sick. Cam Jordan coming off the edge with Alex Okafor. He would be okay, a pretty decent locker room guy. He has a rough edge, but again, this is a fun team. Everybody on New Orleans, they're taking pictures, they're having fun, they're, you know, gelling as a team, really good team chemistry, so it wouldn't be a bad fit.
That is for sure. Marlon Favorite at Big Fave 504 is the way to follow him on Twitter. Marlon, on Friday when you join us, we'll talk a little bit about LSU spring practice. Go do some digging, see what some of the storylines going in there as we get closer to that spring game towards the end of April there, and sort of see where LSU is going. And maybe we'll have some more news, kind of quiet over the weekend for New Orleans. So, Marlon, we'll talk again on Friday.
Sounds like a winner.
At Big Fave 504, and check out that podcast as well. Just go to Big Fave 504 and you'll see the link to it. And on Facebook, all the different ways you can do it. Pepito, Brian, he was like the fifth person, right? Fourth to fifth person that we had to go through in order to get qualifications there?
Yeah, people requested harder answer or harder questions. Yeah. There you go.
There you go. Well, tomorrow will be the final one.
Ooh.
Then we'll give it away on April 3rd. Matt Moscone, and after further review, is up next.